Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
Well, and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. Dr. Mouse, she's AV on the board. And Weber is still in Vegas. That's it, then. Mr. Carl Denninger with us. SP Futures up 675. NASDAQ Futures up 2275. Bears suck. Other than that, happy Monday to everybody. Carl, are you with us? All right. Okay. We'll get some of these other numbers while we track Carl down. We have the Boeing's down another $5 this morning after being down like 20 on Friday. This latest thing has been a little bit of a hit for those guys in regards to the 737 and how much they might have pushed it through on these. As a matter of fact, if you looked at Friday's numbers, the Dow was a big leader to the downside. We had the Dow was down 255, and I'm going to say 160. That was Boeing. It's roughly $8 a point, and they were down 20 or 19 or something. So it's a big hit. So today they're down another five. They're at 338. I'm still thinking they're hanging in above 300. But you see these pictures, these planes all parked. And like I've said before, I've got some experience with that. And the Carl, how are you, bud?
I'm doing well.
I'm just talking about the Boeing a tad, and how they're down another $5 this morning. They're finally starting to get some, not that like I want them down, but I had a feeling that there was something more. You've seen pictures of those planes all parked all over the place, and I can't believe how much money they've got to be spending, Carl, to be paying for all these parts and aren't going anywhere.
Oh, you know, you don't think there could be a problem there, do you?
Well, you know, I was just mentioning that I was in an exact situation like that, only, you know, a million times smaller on the Amtrak Superliner cars, and I worked at Pullman. They couldn't get the design finalized because the Amtrak kept changing the design like every 2 seconds. And we probably had 40 cars at various stages of retrofit, and the place was loaded. We took delivery on all the trucks, and they were all over the place. And we had to get warehouses that we had sold. We had to rent them back and put seats in there. And I'm counting seats, and I'm seeing dead rats in the seats. I'm going, this is just swell. But I mean, you can't turn your suppliers off. If you do, they can't start back up. They can't lay all their people off and expect to get them paid. It's a real problem. I mean, these guys are up to, it's been damn near a year now, and they're doing what, 40 planes a month? They got 400.
Well, this is one of those deals where when you get down to it, we still are not entirely sure who screwed Neil Grandma's pooch, but somebody did. And everybody's pointing fingers at each other now. Okay. So, you know, I'm assuming you heard this thing about these text messages between
right.
a couple of, a test pilot and one of their, one of his friends that Boeing sat on for some period of time. And now they're saying, oh, no, we really didn't. We turned it over to the DOJ because there was a subpoena. And you know, we believed that meant we couldn't talk to anybody else about it. And then over the weekend it comes out that they say, oh well, the FAA had all this information before the certification was originally issued, and they were all right with that, which is directly contrary to everything that has been said up until now about what went on with MCAS and the command authority being quadrupled on that thing during testing.
Right. I mean, it's hard to, as you well know, it's hard to cut the wheat from the chaff on these things, but I'm going to say there's a couple things that I think Boeing is guilty of, and you can critique me. I mean, one is, especially with Southwest Air, the beauty of the 737 was, I think, any pilot could just plop in any plane. I think the same guys could fly to 400, 500, 800, and I don't think it mattered. Maybe it did, but I don't think so. But I think that Boeing overrepresented that this plane was just like all the others. And it's not. It's way more of a new plane.
Essentially the essence of the entire MCAS thing was that when they moved the pylons forward and up on the engines, they changed the aerodynamic characteristics of the aircraft substantially. And the problem that gets caused there is that under certain flight regimes, if the nose is up and you're under a large amount of power, and you add power because you're close to the ground and you're in a stall condition, instead of the plane going forward faster and tending to level off, it tends to pitch up more, which makes the problem worse. Okay? So you can get into a situation where you get in what's called an accelerated stall and you can't get out of it. All right? And if you're close enough to the ground and that happens, you're going to die. So the MCAS was an attempt to hide that. All right? And the reason they wanted to hide it was largely because Southwest has a corporate mantra, thou shalt not issue a new type certificate for anything we're going to buy, and force our pilots to go back through training.
Right. Not to mention the Ethiopian pilots.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, you know, that was the driving force behind all of this. And the problem is there's a bridge too far issue that comes into play here. If Boeing had lengthened the main landing gear in order to get more clearance so they didn't have to move the pylons forward and up, then they probably wouldn't have had this aerodynamic issue. The problem with doing that is there wasn't any way to do it given where they wanted to stow the main gear, you know, in the main wing spars. There just isn't space for it.
So
in order to do that, they'd have to make major changes to the structure of the aircraft.
At some point, I know that the I obviously don't seem to know as much about this as you, but when they built the 707 and McDonnell Douglas built the DC-8, for some reason the DC-8 was stretchable and the 707 was not. And Boeing essentially swore they would never design another plane that they couldn't have bigger iterations of down the line. So, but I'm curious as to why I used to fly in a 757 all the time when I used to fly a lot. And what is the point of making the 737, which had its tremendous niche? I mean, obviously it's best-selling plane of all time by far. The Boeing sold more 737s than they have every other one of their ones combined, Carl. I don't know if you knew that or not, but it's up there. And, but they basically bleep can the 757. But now they want the 737 to be able to do everything the 757 was, quote, designed to do. Another 1,000 miles, another 1,500 miles, more people. It's just not designed for that. I mean, why they ever got rid of the, they need a bigger frame, a bigger footprint. Like you say, landing, the 757 was what, 6 feet higher in the air or 5 feet or whatever. I mean, it was designed for more fuel capacity. You didn't have to move things around because the thing was designed to go 6 hours in the air, or the 737. I don't understand that decision at all. Do you?
Well, it's driven by the customers, okay? And the problem, you know, what ends up happening, and this is the same thing that we've seen in so many other fields, is that you have, you know, a customer base that says, well, you know, here are our goals, and by the way, we happen to be a huge amount of your business.
Right.
If you don't give us what we want, we'll go somewhere else. And so then, you know, and that kind of negotiation with major customers happens in all industries. But when you get to the point that you start stretching safety margins,
well, that's what I'm saying.
Cheating the process.
But I mean, just because you use the same letters on the side, same numbers, 737, this thing's not a 737, like the 400s were, the 300s and the 200s.
Well, there's a number of things that are kind of interesting that fall into this in a way that have not really been exposed out in the public and haven't been talked about a lot. When this first started, I wrote a series of articles on it and got a bunch of pushback from people that got really, really unhappy that I was basically going after Boeing. And I said, you know, look, the aerodynamic stuff on this is not really that complicated. It's not really that hard to understand. Hiding it, and especially when you design for a certain amount of command authority in a system, and you find out when you're testing it that you need four times as much in order to get the characteristics you need, it means you screwed up, and you did it in a way that is unsafe, and you need to go figure out why that happened. You don't just go ahead and say, okay, we'll give it four times as much authority, and then, you know, that's what we do.
Well,
not what happened.
Didn't they also can that system on the 767? They went to put it in, and they said, no, it makes it worse.
Well, it's the basic issue that you run into with things like this is that anything that is safety critical that can cause you to lose an aircraft, there has to be another way to control it, that so that if that thing gets disabled or is insane, you're not stuffed in a box that you can't get out of. All right. And that needs to be something that everybody that flies that aircraft understands what to do and how to do it.
Allegedly, they were dropping this plane off at, you know, let's say, for instance, the American pilots are better. Okay, fine. They probably are. How do you drop 10 of these planes off at Ethiopian Airlines without even a simulator for these guys to try it for a while?
Well, that's the part of the problem, is that the premise of putting this thing together the way they did it was that it flies exactly like the other one. And that was a lie.
See, yeah, except it doesn't.
Right, and that was a lie. And so the thing is, one of the things that's rather interesting about this that I figured out pretty early on when this started, is that I started getting sent, you know, pictures or screenshots of the console and, you know, where the cutoff switches are for the stabilizer trim and stuff like this. And then I have some friends of mine that are aviators, including ex-military aviators, and, you know, had some conversations with them about, okay, you know, I mean, runaway stabilizer is not an unheard of thing. It happens. And it's something that you train for as a pilot. And then you start, you know, doing a little bit of investigation. Okay, you know, how's a military deal with this kind of thing in transport aircraft? And you find that in many of their aircraft, they have both electric and hydraulic. So if one of those goes nuts on you, or you have to turn it off for some reason, you got the other one. All right, and then this gets hinky because they changed the cutoff switches, and the implication of the way they're labeled now on this new plane is that in order to disable it, you have to shut them both off. But if you do that, then all you've got left is the manual controls, and there are ways to get into a certain area of the flight envelope where you physically cannot turn the manual overrides.
Okay, I did not know that. Hey, I'll shift gears on you a little bit. I mentioned the other day, I don't know if you know him at all, but I'm positive, even though when Matty gets back, he has a list of everybody. I know we've had William Cullen on the show at least once, maybe twice or three times. The gentleman who wrote the Vanity Fair article regarding the front running of the trades, and all of a sudden,
yeah,
this weekend I'm getting letter after letter from they must be Trumpkins, that, you know, this has all been dissed. And Carl, is it possible? I went to a nice party last night, a Halloween party over at Dr. J's, was talking to some people, and you and I talked about it last time you were on, and we talked about it with Wayne, and talked about you and Wayne agreeing on stuff. How scary is that? Somehow or another, we have lost our way big time. And I don't, why are people, I learned from you this morning on 737, and that's why I love doing the show. I learn from people. People should be able to learn from me regarding the market, because that's what I've done for my whole life. And I can sense when things are being front run. People used to do it every day in the pit when I was there. I mean, I know who the creatures are. I mean, whenever there's an advantage anywhere, wherever there's a dime to be made, people will find a way. As a matter of fact, Dr. J's made a nice career out of putting together a system where he doesn't know where the stuff's coming from, but his system flags this unusual activity in places. It's
right.
Always been there. The people who are in the regulatory area, if it's the right people, they deny it's happening. I mean, and all of a sudden, this article that people sent me about it being dissed, they called the head of the Merck. And I'm going to go into, I mean, that couldn't possibly be. My guys are on that all the time.
Like they were back when over the holiday weekend, when I'm watching a movie with my laptop sitting on a little end table next to me, and I see the spoofing nonsense going on in the futures. Okay, there's virtually no traffic in the futures because it's a holiday day. It's, you know, the market itself is closed except the CME's trading, and I see this, and I take some. I start my screen recorder. I take some screenshots of this. This is not an ordinary retail terminal. Okay, they don't have any special access here, and did a YouTube video on it. And I get this nasty, nasty, you know, phone call from the people that say, well, you know, why didn't you call us and report? I said, if you guys had any surveillance that was actually paying attention to this stuff, why didn't you stop it?
Well, you go back.
You're upset that I'm reporting on something that you claim that you have surveillance on and it isn't supposed to happen? Well, guess what? It is happening. And there you go. And then a few years later, they after I put this out, I got this nasty, threatening email from the person that claimed that he was the one who was doing it, who lived in Britain at the time. You know, oh, well, you know, you're alleging that this is illegal, and I don't know. Well, guess what, buddy? It is. And a few years later, they actually busted him and threw him in jail.
Well, it's, so, if it isn't illegal, you know, it's immoral.
The idea that this doesn't go on is just laughable. The thing is normally in the market, there's enough traffic that it's very hard to see.
That's exactly right. And, I mean, I tell a story without Milton Friedman thought that you should never put regulators in that. Of course, in his day, everything was open outcry. So you had to actually see the guy making the trade with you or girl.
Right.
So his point was, why even worry about it? The place will police itself. Well, you can't police yourself when you go electronic. So when you go electronic, these are little things that, like, fall through the cracks. Well, how are you going to tell people they're front running? What do you mean? But the point, Carl, and I think you and I probably agree on this, you've got a Congress that has people, clerks are selling this information to people. Every single time, I mean, Dr. J, first they didn't believe him, then they wanted the information before 9/11 of the unusual put activity in the airline stocks the day before the towers came down.
Right.
I mean, this happens all the time. I mean, we have exchanges that sell preferred feeds to people. I mean, why do you think that the chief and PTI Securities can't be in the off-floor market-making business? Because...
Right. And then there's another thing that goes along with this, which is that, you know, one of the things that there was a former SEC guy that was on CNBC Friday morning, and he made a fairly cogent argument. I went back and I read through the various areas of U.S. code on this. He made a fairly cogent argument that this isn't even illegal because it's not, under the definition of insider trading, it's too ephemeral to make the connection because it's an index.
Right.
So the idea that you can actually have insider trading on the spoos because the president's going to make some kind of an announcement probably doesn't meet the legal definition of insider trading because it's 500 securities. It's not a security. Now, if it was, you know, we're going to hose Boeing and then somebody's buying puts, that would fit within the definition. But in this case, it's not. It's an index of 500 stocks.
You know what the definition was when we were on the trading floor? I mean, this is going to floor you. Then I'm going to ask you a question that I suspect you're not going to know the answer to, and you'll be stunned that you don't. We were on the trading floor, and people would run in and buy a bunch of calls, and all of a sudden a stock would print up half a buck. There'd be a print. You know, the stock could be offered at a quarter, but all of a sudden, you know, 100,000 shares printed at say a half or 5/8, and people get all pissed off. And the moronic definition of the CBOE regulators at the time, none of whom are still around, well, a couple of them were, but they were junior back then, was if the firm didn't participate on the print, it was not front running. In other words, if I bought these calls from you when you thought the stock was at an eighth and it really was going to print a half a minute from now, if I wasn't on the sell order on the half print, in other words, I didn't lock my gain in instantly,
right,
then it was not front running. But can you, my genius friend, can you point to a law that regards front running? That defines it.
No.
There is no law. There's a stack of people being fined for it. There's a stack of definitions from SEC, NASD, now FINRA, There is no law where the people in this country that have a job to define what insider trading is. They can't do it. Our congressman. And now, and that's what causes you to have, is it really illegal for the person over in Hong Kong to trade in our markets when they know the things happen in Hong Kong and we don't? I'm going to say there is no law. You're correct. Is it immoral? Should there be an electronic exchange that allows people to do things anonymously, that they can just do it and nobody knows who the hell they are, when you don't have a law? You have congressmen who will tell you they don't have to pay any attention to things like that, for earning. You have their clerks that are selling information to people that are trading. You have the people from Hong Kong. I still have this somewhere, Kyle. You probably remember this. The people from Hong Kong came out and said virtually all the Fed announcements were being front-run. And the interesting part was, they said the Bureau of Labor Statistics stuff that we talk about, the Friday job stuff, no evidence of front-running.
Right.
But and then our buddy, I don't know if you know him, Pedro da Costa. He's been on the show a bunch of times. Pedro asked Janet Yellen at one of her first news conferences, what is the story with the insider trading investigation?
Yeah.
She got so pissed off, he was never invited back, and the Wall Street Journal didn't back him up, and eventually he left there. So,
well, yeah, and well, you know, there was supposedly some kind of internal investigation going on for a long time with regards to who was leaking out of the Fed.
Yeah, well, I mean,
of course, you know what came of that, right?
Yeah, nothing. So, I mean, so what I'm saying is, even though the electronic system is cheaper and faster, I don't know if it's any better, Carl, because I think you chase people away. People think the market's rigged now. That's why I have a lot of my clients are with me, because they know I have puts on everything for stock that, you know, I have everybody protected, which costs money. So it's not always the best over a 10-year period. It's like buying car insurance on your car and you never cracked it up. You can't trust this. You can't trust these people. But my concern is, why, if you called Terry Duffy today, the head of the Merck, he's immediately going to defend himself that we're on this, like, you know, what was a commercial where the guy says, "Where's my car?" And there's two fat guys sitting on it eating lunch, and he goes, "I got my best men on it right now." You know,
yeah.
I mean, dude, why do these people, they immediately defend something they can't defend, something that's indefensible? The entire industry is based on people getting an edge on somebody else. In some ways, that's the beauty of it, Carl. And when you had a trading floor, you knew, I never could put my finger on who the fast money was, because the fast money is so brutal, they don't care who they screw. The reason why Goldman Sachs would be running around and they would be doing this trading for people back when you actually made money on commissions. So they'd be paying Goldman Sachs, like everybody else on the floor is paying 60 cents a contract, and Goldman Sachs charging $1. But their guy would run out. They would do, you know, whatever, a 1,500 lot when 1,500 was a huge number. And they'd go into one of these crowds and maybe Goldman Sachs, they forced Goldman Sachs to essentially take the other side of the trade. Because the people in the crowd go, "Wait a minute. We know you guys. We know that guy. I'm doing 100 with you, not 500. Get the bleep out of here." Well, Goldman is forced to take maybe 500 for their own account. So it's only when, if Goldman's screwing everybody on the floor, they don't care. But the day they start getting screwed, where they're losing the half on the 500 lot, they say they bounce the customer. Well, where does the customer go? He goes to the next place. So there was a group of like five or six firms that these guys would go to, and the fast money guys would just kind of rotate through the firms, until the firm got skunked and says, "Look, I'm not losing money to these idiots. The commission isn't worth it." So,
right.
but there always has been people that have an inside track to front run, and they've never been policed. And half of them, like you say, I'm not even sure it's quote illegal, but it sure as hell is immoral. And if you had a trading floor, you know, maybe somebody would come out without a nose one of these days, or one smashed up. I mean, if you start coming in with, if you front ran IBM's earnings like 6 months in a row, after five, people figured out it. Even people on the trading floor figured out after five or two or three, right? When money's involved. But now the system has no discipline on it whatsoever. And so you're trying to tell me, and you know what? Terry Duffy, whoever gave the announcement from the Merck, is probably somewhat correct. That Bill Cohen said, you know, whatever, 200,000 E-minis were bought. It's probably not the same person. Somebody started out with 40 or 50. It lit up on somebody's unusual activity, and everybody piled on. There might be 30 people on that side of the street. It doesn't make it right, Carl. It doesn't mean the first person was any less slimy. It just means they had a bunch of pilers on, right?
Well, yeah, and the idea that they don't know who it is laughable. Okay, I mean, yes, they do know who it is. And you know, I mean, at a minimum, they know which firms are involved in it, right? And they can go back to them and say, okay, who put those trades on, right?
They claim.
But the thing is this. I mean, that it's not, one guy in, you got position limits, you got, that's, I get that. That's not the point. The point is it's obvious. You know, statistical analysis, at some point, it's like, Hillary Clinton manages to make all his money from, from a series of trades and cattle futures that statistically is about as likely as me being hit by an asteroid when I go get my mail this afternoon.
But they're not the first people. They're not the only people I know that have made trades and put the winners in one person's account and losers in another.
Yeah.
I mean, but
the thing is that's not random luck.
No. Well, I mean, I'm going to say that to this day, if you could find somebody in the SEC, they will tell you they were not able to find the people who did the puts before 9/11. Somewhere in Europe, bounced from two or three firms, blah, blah, blah. And you know what, Carol, that's BS. They obviously ran into somebody that said, don't investigate that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. SP Futures up 7, NASDAQ Futures up 23.50. I'm Tom Howie, he's Mr. Carl Denninger. She's AV on the board. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. He's Mr. Carl Benninger. She's AV Angelica Vlasenko on the board. SP Futures up 7. NASDAQ Futures up 23.75. Dow only up 27 because Boeing's taking a chunk out of the Dow again. It's down 460 again today after being down like 20 bucks on Friday. So they're not doing so hot, but we'll see how this goes at the 737. Most airlines have pushed enthusiastically the use of the plane out to at least January, so not going to be around for the Christmas season either. And a lot of companies are really dependent on it. Delta's happy as a clam because they don't have any, but now they got to worry about tariffs on the planes they're buying. So I'm not so sure anybody's too happy in that industry right about now. Except they're making a lot of money because less seats are just charging more. DAX up 91.7%, FTSE up 8, call that flat. CAC around up 8, call that flat. So up, but not a whole lot over there. Nikkei up 56.2%, Shanghai up 1, we'll call that flat. Hang Seng up 6, call that flat. So not much going on really anybody today so far. 10-year, 1.775. That keeps creeping up a little bit. The Bund, minus 0.35. It's, again, creeping up. In Japan, wow, minus 0.13. At this rate, 2 weeks, they'll be even or positive. That'll really be something. Like to see it, actually. Oil down 42 cents, 53.36. Brent down 60 cents, 58.82. Natural gas, 230, hanging right around this low. RBOB, 160. We've got gold up $1.30, 14.95. Silver up 17 cents, 17.75. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? I'll handle the Bears. I don't expect you to say how lousy they were. Do the rest.
Good morning, everyone. It's 36 minutes past the hour. 59 degrees currently in Chicago. We're expecting a windy day with periods of rain from 9 till 3 p.m. A few rumbles of thunder possible later. Winds could occasionally gust over 40 miles per hour. The highest of the day will be 63 and the lowest 47. In Phoenix, 57 degrees currently. The highest will be 87, the lowest 59. Steady and sunny day, no surprises, clear sky. Light winds possible later at night. As always, nice and sunny weather in Phoenix. In traffic, we have accident reported at Des Plaines River Road and Ainslie Street, which doesn't affect the traffic, as well as the accident on East 43 Road Street at South Drexel Boulevard. Overall, in the traffic situation looks pretty clear right now. No significant delays expected. Just a few road constructions here and there, which may cause some delays later as the traffic volume increasing. And in sports, let's start with the good news. Cardinals beat Giants 27-21, and Bears lost to Saints 25-36.
The game was not as close as the score would indicate, AV.
Yeah.
They scored like right near the end, and God, Carl, our Bears are starting to suck.
So,
Carl, are you with us?
Yep.
Yes,
I am.
Our Bears are starting to suck. What'd you think of Houston in the World Series?
Oh, you know, hey, it's kind of interesting to see a little bit of a change.
Yeah. They got a good team. Did you happen to take Illinois on the points on Saturday?
No, I generally don't bet on sports, so.
You think there was even, could there even have been a money line on that game? I don't see how there could have been.
I don't know. I don't think so, but.
What could it have been? 9-1? It had to be. I mean, it had to be huge.
Yeah.
I mean, they were anywhere between 24 to 30 point dogs against Wisconsin. Wisconsin's rolled over everybody. All of a sudden, they lose to Illinois. Lovie Smith gets a win. That's unbelievable.
I will say this, though. I was sitting in the bar yesterday watching the Saints-Bears game.
Yeah, God. Well, I was sitting over at Dr. J's, but as your buddy Howard Cosell, his greatest line ever, that's why you play the game. You don't just assume one's going to win and the other, you know, that's why you play the game. He's right. I mean, I want to ask you, situation, man. I was reading this, well, two articles. One is, he sounded like you, only worse, worse or better, depending on how you look at it. He was talking about the overloaded debt and how if something happens, how it couldn't possibly, it has to be worse than 2008, even though there isn't a specific spot like the mortgages that, quote, can be fixed or isolated. He goes, it's just general, kind of all over the place. And he says that he's not surprised because Trump, during his campaign, basically said if you end up campaigning it, he says you give everybody, you know, 60 cents on the buck, and that's what you do, which you would in, like, a real estate deal. But the only problem is the U.S. is not a real estate deal. And now there's this guy who wrote this article this morning, and he's a renowned economist, and how I don't understand, Carl. I mean, obviously I'm aware of the credits. Everybody knows what that is. But how do people look at consumer sentiment and people buying stuff, and if they don't actually have the money and they just charge it, why is that a positive? I can't. It could be a positive if somebody gets a job, buys a car, buys three new suits, and everything works out fine. I guess I get it, but what if it doesn't? I mean,
well, that's part of the problem is that we've gone, you know, when you get into the degenerate side of things, and people in the so-called economic profession, one of their intentional blind spots for a long time is that they considered debt to not have a downside, and that it was essentially an expression of time preference. Okay, and that's all it is. Okay, in other words, you know, you take on debt because you want something now, as opposed to saving the money and buying it and then having it later. Right? It sounds like a nice idea in theory. The problem is, of course, that's not how it ends up working out. Because if you look at the facts, especially when it comes to municipals and states and the federal government, and now corporates, is it never gets paid off. Okay, they just roll it over into, you know, it gets refinanced. There's another, you know, this 10-year bond is maturing, so we'll issue another one, and you know, then we'll add some more on top of it because we got to keep spending more than we take in. And the problem with doing that is that you end up in this coffin corner box that we're in right now, where rates end up, once they go below the nominal GDP level, then you are being paid to do this. And the problem is, GDP is stated in dollars, but dollars are not an invariant unit.
Right. That's exactly right.
Right. Well, and so what's really happening here is that when rates are below the nominal growth rate, anywhere along the curve, what you are doing is intentionally spread between those two things is the negative impact on actual GDP output, and there's no way around this. This is just fact.
Well,
okay, and
Carl,
you end up with a situation like we have now, where the federal government is running a 25% cash operation.
Well, let's back up a second. When you're talking about the corporations, part of that, I'm going to say, is the tax law. If you decide, okay, I'm not talking about, when Kevin worked at Better World Books, you know, they did a significant percentage, they did textbooks in September. I'm not talking about going out and borrowing $1 million in September because you got to buy paper or books, whatever you're doing, and then
right.
In October you pay it back. That's short-term financing, which every firm, I think, needs to do, okay? But you can actually make a decision if you have an ongoing firm that does pretty well. Whether you're doing well, I'm saying if you're stable, you can in essence make the decision. I'm gonna be 40% equity, 60% long-term financing, bonds, or I guess preferred stock, sort of in the middle. But let's keep it simple. Let's say bonds or equity. Now, your idiotic tax code tells you that the interest you pay is tax deductible, but the dividends aren't. When in fact, anything over probably 5 or 10 years is just as much long-term financing as equity, really, right? That's what you're saying.
Right.
I mean, those people, they never intend to be all equity. They intend to roll that 50%, say it's 50-50. They always intend to roll that over, and even if they're paying 6%, they're returning 10 and have for like a long time. So it's actually not a bad idea until the year comes that you return zero and now you got to pay. But for a lot of companies, that never happens, Carl. And if, you know, and there are companies that have been around for forever. And if you and I had a place that every year we made widgets and, you know, we made this much dough, would we want some of the quote capital to be long-term debt? Yes, probably. One, for the leverage, and two, because of the tax treatment. Am I right?
Yeah, the tax situation gets complicated, and any firm, once it gets to a certain size and starts doing a lot of interstate and especially international business, starts looking for ways to game that code.
No, I'm not.
The amount of money involved is enormous.
No, I'm saying, I'm staying very simple here for our listeners, is that if we decide we need $2 million, okay, and we go out and raise $2 million capital, equity,
right.
We sell $2 million worth of stock, we pay people dividends, that's out of income. If we say, well, you know, we're not going to do that, we're going to raise $1 million and we're going to go get 30-year bonds for the other million, and we're going to be 5% on these things. Every year when we send out that 5% to that group of, I use the term funders for our place, that 5% is deductible, which
that's
makes...
That's right. And that's, yeah. And that's the, you know, interest deductibility is, it's a distortion. And oh, by the way, it everybody screamed about this SALT thing, right, with mortgages.
Right.
All right. Well, you know, if you think about it, how is it that New York and Illinois got in a situation where you have $15,000, $20,000 tax bills, property tax bills? And the answer is the distortion that was put into the tax code where those interest expenses were deductible.
That's okay. Surely part of
now,
it.
Well, it's a big part of how that happened. Okay, if they weren't deductible ever to begin with, then how much screaming would have happened when the taxes were $6,000 or $7,000, and all of a sudden they start moving up?
I would say, Carl, that all of us that have an economic background would say that you have no business having mortgage interest tax deductible. But I would like to see if that were to happen. I would say, okay, I'm not going to screw the guy who just bought the house yesterday, because that happens to people big time, right? I would say, okay, over the next 20 years, you know, this year it's 95% deductible, next year it's 90.
Right.
Let's do it that way. But you're right, all it does is inflate the value of the house to where it becomes riskier, correct? I mean, it's not a good idea at all.
Well, it does that, and then the other thing is that what ends up happening is that the government turns around and essentially steals your house over time.
Right. And I would say, I don't think long-term financing should be deductible either if dividends aren't.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that long-term financing should be deductible, but I don't think you should be able to deduct interest at all, because I don't want to preference, as an economic choice, I don't want to preference going into debt.
I would say that any kind of business... There's a big difference between, I'll put it to you this way, Carl. I've been in, and I'm not saying you haven't, but I've been in a lot of these, you know, construction kind of areas, and I've written these bids for people. I didn't write them, but I've read them and modified some of them. Say, for instance, you have, McCormick Place goes out for people to put plumbing in, you know, or whatever it is. And they,
right.
they can, now when Pullman, we did our contracts with, Boston and with Amtrak, but I was on the Boston one, so that's what I'm talking about. when you sign the deal, they gave you 10%. It was a $60 million contract. They gave us $6 million. They gave us a check. And then when the drawings were approved, we got another 10%. And then when the first car was laid down, we got another 10%. So they essentially bid the thing out where you didn't have to use your own money. Okay, now this is back when interest rates are like 9%. So it's a big deal, right? So I'm going to say that if they didn't do it that way, and Pullman had to go out and essentially borrow $60 million to build the damn things, and they didn't pay us until the cars showed up a year and a half later, there's no way that to me is long-term financing. That's project financing, and it absolutely is a cost of that project and should be deductible.
Yeah.
So I'm saying at the long-term interest, where you're debating whether you do stock or 30-year bonds, that I don't want deductible. But I mean, if somebody says no, you've got to pay all the pipe and all the fasteners and all the stuff for this project, and McCormick Place is going to take you a year, and when we're done, we'll write you one check. I think it's wrong to say that the borrowing I have to do from the bank or whoever to make that happen, because I don't have money in my pocket. I mean, I have to borrow, and I'm going to get paid from these guys at the end. And I do. Now, that financing, to me, is the cost of that project. That should be deductible, I think.
Yeah, the only reason I say no is because anything that you try to put together like that is people are going to try to find a way to get around the rules.
Well, what about the pharmacies here? The five or six that are left in Illinois, Carl, because the state doesn't pay for any of the prescriptions from Medicaid for like, you know, God knows how long. If those people that are borrowing money for the $100 prescription where they only made $5 on it in the first place, if their interest wasn't deductible, they'd be out of business this afternoon.
Oh yeah, but see, the thing is that that goes back to the you know what I was saying about it earlier, which is that what you do when you allow that to be deductible is you allow this kind of perverse nonsense to go on, like what's going on in Illinois, where they just, oh, we'll pay you when we feel like it.
Right.
Right? And the thing is, the state would be forced to stop doing that immediately.
Actually, you know what, Carl? I'm going to disagree totally. I'm going to say, in a normal world, I won't say things were normal 35 years ago, I'm with you right now. I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. But today's world, the Carl and Chief drugstore are going to have to go somewhere and pay 7 or 8%, and Walgreens can get by at 2, or CVS, or 2.5. The edge there is so dramatic. It's all part of the same picture. That's why there's no independent people left here in Illinois, because the big guys can finance that receivable way, and they shouldn't be able to, because the money's coming from the state. So it shouldn't matter whether you and I are two sleaze bags versus Walgreens. If we write over to the factor guy, how's that for a term this hour in the morning? Right over the factor guy, that receivable, it should make no difference on that loan, but right now it does. And that's wrong, I think.
Yeah, that's what happens when you allow this kind of distortion in the system go on for as long as it has.
Well, there's my question. My next question, Carl, we've talked about a lot of stuff. I want to get into some of this teacher stuff here in the Chicago, if you don't mind. Because.
Sure.
But it's easy for us to identify a lot of things that are, quote, wrong. And I think a lot of them are tied together. I mean, I think all of us agree on that, you and I and Kevin. And the right and the left all agree to. I honestly don't know, Carl, what are the first two or three things to do first? If I could, I would drop credit card interest down to 12% or 15% maybe, which is that's ridiculous, and say, look, if that guy doesn't deserve that, you know, I mean, plus the idea that you go out and even get more people that you don't want to give interest to, say it's 30%, and use that as an excuse for jacking everybody else up. I mean, somewhere along the line, Carl, this is not competitive anymore to me. I mean, it just isn't. And in the areas that we've allowed to not become competitive, I think as a society or as a government, there's a big difference between monopoly pricing and competitive pricing. And when the government's the one that actually makes the monopoly, they should have their eyes open and say, look what I just did. I got at least, you know, I got to do something here. But, you know, that's why it bothers me all day long when I hear people really from the right or the left will say, no, this industry's got to be regulated. Facebook's got to be regulated. For God's sake, it's like trying to define volatility, Carl. It's very difficult to define. You can put it in a formula. It's like defining. What do you mean by regulated? Does that mean there's 548 people sitting at Facebook, proofreading stuff as it goes out, watching theirs guys proof? What does it all mean? A guy leaning over your shoulder in a pit, seeing if you carded the trade right? I mean, we don't need that. What is regulation? How do you even define it for a particular industry, a particular cause? Let's hire 10,000 people, put in a building, and figure out whatever they feel like doing 5 years from now. That's regulation. What are we even talking about when you toss these terms around?
Yeah, that's part of the problem is that there's, you know, it's in the world of technology, where I think if I was going to take a top level look at those kinds of things, I would take a close look at the use of the word free.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would make the abuse of that where you use the word free, but it really isn't, because you're harvesting information and then you're selling that. That is a price. And when, you know, and I don't think we need new laws here. Common law fraud is enough.
Well, what do you think is this, it's the same thing in a brokerage business. People don't care if the firm gets to trade against your order. When people have free brokerage versus 15, 20 years ago, very few people know that in those days the broker's job was to get you the best price, and you paid for that. Maybe you paid too much, maybe you didn't, I don't know. Now the broker's job, you're giving the broker an opportunity to trade against your order for a nanosecond. That's a big difference. He has no obligation. Well, they will tell you, given the various systems they have where electronically you're supposed to find the best offer and the best bid. But in fact, for as long as they can do it, and it only takes half a second, they essentially they have a right to trade ahead of your order, which is a whole different thing. That's why it's free. I mean, but the thing that I don't get here, and I'm going to tie two things together here, and you think I'm totally nuts, more than you already do. But when you had Milton Friedman saying you don't have to worry about people policing front running of orders, he thought there was a trading pit and there were people standing there and you could see your enemy, right? Well, there isn't right anymore. So, okay, we went to this other system and we basically bleep canned the old system. And the checks and balances that were in there because you could actually see people aren't there. And I was talking to some people about this school strike the other night. And everybody was talking about, the ladies in there happened to have friends that were teachers, and they were talking about the entire breakdown of any kind of, I mean, if you listen to this, of course they want money, but really they're talking about security, they're talking about nurses, they're talking about counselors, because how many kids in a class are on drugs? The one was saying her friend is heavy, and the eighth graders keep telling her how fat she is all day long. There's no, I mean, you can't, and everybody would talk about, you know, in our day, you know, a teacher had a ruler or whatever. And I'm not into beating people, but I will say this, Carl, when you take a system where students are somewhat afraid to act up, either from the teacher or the parents, and you remove all that, I'm not saying that that system was a good one or not. I'm saying, but before you say that's no good, you should sort of have something to replace it. And there's nothing there. It's just like in the electronic trading system. Okay, the guy from Hong Kong doesn't have to wander into the pit 2 seconds before the Hong Kong person says something or Trump says something, where he comes in with this huge order. That's the only time you ever saw the guy, where it's very obvious to all concerned that he, you know, had some prior knowledge. Or why doesn't somebody say that maybe Twitter hangs on to Trump's tweet for a second and gets it out to somebody? How do we know that can't happen? But my point is we go from one to the other, and we condemn the old system. But the new system seems to have no pegs on the stool. I mean, there's nothing there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and then, you know, in the context of the Chicago teachers thing, you know, that's a rot that's gotten into everything, because we took the federal government and stuck it somewhere where it has zero constitutional justification for being, and that is education. And so we broke the 50 political laboratory thing that, you know, is part of federalism. I mean, that's one of the alleged geniuses in the design of the United States. And the problem with that is that what you end up with is this situation where everybody's got a mandate, and so now every kid has to be in the same classroom, no matter who that kid is and what their individual strengths and weaknesses are. And they're all entitled to the best we can possibly provide. Not the same level of effort on our part, but the same results. Well, that's unachievable.
Right.
But that's the mandate. So if the mandate's unachievable, the results are going to stink, and the costs are going to be outrageous. In virtually every endeavor that you undertake, getting 80% of what you want in terms of results is quite inexpensive. The last 20% gets exponentially harder.
Well, I would agree with that, yeah.
Well, when you try to get the 99.99997%, okay, how many levels of exponent have we gone to? You know, we climbed that wall.
I know we don't have much time, but we'll talk about this next time. I would say there was no nurse in any school that I was in, but I don't know anybody who was on drugs all day either. I mean, I'm talking about the
right.
bad drugs. I'm talking about the good drugs. And you didn't have, good drugs, prescribed drugs. And you didn't have guys or girls buying the drugs from the guys that are supposed to be taking them because they have a different effect. When I've talked to a couple of teachers, they say if people take their meds, they're asleep on their desk and you can't even talk to them. Or if they're not, they're bouncing off the walls. But I never had to deal with that. So I guess if this group is calling for nurses and stuff, they must be needed, Carl. I mean, anyway, Carl, we got to wrap it up, buddy. Thank you. Good stuff. How does people find you again?
Market-ticker.org.
All right, buddy. It's not like we don't have enough to talk about it. But, you know, it's funny how it comes down to the same subject, doesn't it? Like a little common sense. Carl, take care of yourself.
Yes.
SP Futures up 850, NASDAQ Futures up 2750. Come back with Mr. John Flanagan.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here in our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. There's something happening.
Well, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hatch. He's AV on the board. So, Jan Flanagan, how are you, Jan?
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
All right. S&P futures up 950. Nasdaq futures up 30. Looks like we have a positive day today. Although we have had a couple where we were positive in the morning and then or not. But the earnings season so far seems to be better than expected. I don't know. I think these earnings seasons where everybody's going to be, they're all supposed to be lousy, are the ones that you got to play everything to the upside because everybody, I use the term sandbags, Jan, so much that, I mean, even though, but, you know, it's all about, when you and I have talked though lately over a couple of adult beverages on the show, it's how it really is, people say what they absolutely want to say. What was the song? People hear what they want to hear and disregard the rest. Was that the Eagles?
Right.
I think it was the Eagles, wasn't it?
The, sounds like my creed.
Yeah, every walk, we talked with Carl earlier, I don't know if you caught bits and pieces of it, but I was getting inundated from the right this weekend regarding my report last week of people front-running these news events. You know, some of the Trump tweets, but actually the biggest one, and my suspicions all along were there's probably close to no morals in the White House, but there's really none over in China. So every time those guys come up with an announcement, it wouldn't surprise me at all that those guys were trading ahead of it. And sure enough, one of the biggest ones that this Cohen supposedly found. And I like the guy. He's been on the show, and he's been a good guest. So I happen to believe him. Now, does he have all the tools? But the reflex of the people at the CME and everybody, and of course, since there's some implication to the current administration, the people on the right are immediately denying it in a business they know nothing about. And what? Well, the guy at the CME said that couldn't be happening. Well, duh. I mean, it's like having the commissioner of baseball come out and saying the umpiring sucked last night. I mean, you know, it's not going to happen. How was that umpiring? God, it really sucked. I couldn't watch it either. you're just, even if it's the truth, Jad, you're going to do something to it, right? I mean, because any implication that his people weren't, what do you mean? My people watch for this stuff all the time. Okay. How are they doing? You know,
I really think that there has been a rise in the importance and kind of the even maybe the crucial nature of moles in any system, of people who are kind of self-appointed arbiters of what they think needs to be let out, where is the best way to, you know, get this word out. And it short circuits the people who are trying to do things by the old honest way without having advanced knowledge of it or you know, superior knowledge to anybody else. because of somebody you've got in your employ or whatever who's, you know, feeding this stuff as a way of distorting any kind of fairness. And I wonder if that's even behind the whole fiasco with the Mar-a-Lago choice for the G7, that this was Trump's attempt to put the conference in a place that he could control the surveillance in. And, of course, that completely bombed. But, you know, who's to say that that all these things aren't compromised anyway? Certainly Trump's, you know, security seems to be compromised.
Well,
in the White House,
Janet, in a way, though, you see, when you went in the law direction, I went in the economics, and you know what, they get to the same place at some point. But when you have a market, the whole object of it is that certain people are always going to get information faster than other people. You try and draw lines that are somewhat moral and somewhat ethical. You try, but it seems to get harder and harder. That clearly, if you're the controller and you're writing up the numbers, and you realize, or the VP of finance, whatever the hell does it these days, if you realize Boeing is going to miss their numbers by like a wide margin, you probably shouldn't call up your broker and sell your firm short. I mean, you're a little too close, right?
Right.
Now, but now if somebody has the old news tape, like the Reuters news tape we used to have, where the earnings would come out, but if it was a busy day, the thing would actually be delayed. They'd say the tape was delayed by 2 minutes. Well, if you walk down we had the ability to walk down the pit, even in those days, we could say we want, if we traded in the Boeing crowd, there might have been five stocks in there. We could say we want our stocks prioritized, so our Boeing is not going to be behind Honeywell, or it's not going to be XYZ. So we could actually get our headlines. They would filter ours first. Anybody could do this, okay, if you had one of those machines. It wasn't like we were geniuses, because we weren't. And all of a sudden, I see the Boeing's earnings before 10 other people, and there's something in the book, and I grab it. That's okay. I mean, it's publicly available information. There's always going to be this rush for the news, and that's exceptionally healthy. In my mind, you snooze, you lose. I mean, as they used to say, but that's not the same as if Twitter, for instance, was intentionally holding on to a tweet for 2 seconds and sending it someplace.
Exactly.
Or it's not the same.
Where a nanosecond makes all the difference in the world.
Right. But it's not the same as
suppressing something or delaying it. You enhance, the likelihood that nobody other than the people who you want to are going to see that.
But you and I might say, well, this also applies to Trump's son-in-law and son, And I'm not accusing anybody of anything.
Right.
But now when you get to Capitol Hill, if somebody writes in a bill in committee that all of a sudden Jan Flanagan Inc. is going to, get the contract on the border wall, if there is such a thing, and the staffer calls me up over at Merrill Lynch or someplace and says, oh, you better get someone Jan Flanagan Inc. I don't think that's appropriate, and yet perfectly legal, right?
Right.
And
remember the whole fiasco with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Kahn brothers and the surveillance, in the halls of Congress, where the computers of these people are being tapped. God knows where that information was going.
Right.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg, I think.
Well, the weird part of it is, Jan, is I just, Carl, very seldom I get to stump Carl, because the guy knows all kinds of stuff.
Oh, I really enjoyed listening to him.
Oh, yeah, he's terrific.
All right, yeah, it was good.
I asked him early, before you got on, I said to him, by the way, Carl, can you name the bill where Congress has specified all the rules and penalties and stuff on insider trading and defined what it is? He goes, I don't know the name of it. What's the name of it? I go, Carl, there isn't one. There never was one. And yet everybody will define chapter and verse. Now, there's been all kinds of prosecutions. There's been NASD, FINRA. There's people that have gone to jail. There's the two schmucks from Wisconsin. They were in the printing factory where they were reading Business Week because they printed it off the day before it was published. Since when is Business Week a market-moving event?
Right.
And yet they put those guys... They lost money on their trades. they fined them. I mean, but a congressman can have real news, and that's okay. or the Fed can find out that their stuff has been front run and they pigeonhole it. I mean, it's there's no definition. Your definition is if you're big enough, you can do it. If not, you can't. That's the definition, basically.
Plus, now the speed of communications and the way things move make it very difficult to prove. What do you mean by advanced knowledge? I mean, advanced in the sense of the blink of an eye?
Well, I mean, I'll go back to the trading floor example.
This is just makes it impossible to get any kind of agreement on what, you know, a lapse in insider trading ethics really is.
Well, when you know,
so fast that nobody can really be accountable.
If you were in a trading pit, John, I'm talking 30 years ago, and every time there's some announcement regarding IBM, the same broker walked in with an order from the same guy, and somehow he knew the earnings 2 minutes before everybody else. And the first time you'd go, I guess he got lucky. The second time, not so sure. The third time, even you might punch him.
Right.
Now, electronically, I was just saying with the last part of the last segment, we've given all that up. Now it's all, you know, we don't know who these people. Well, let's put it this way: you can always trace it, but it's not the same as because the CME doesn't care because they're not their members anymore. If their members just got fleeced by somebody, but if the members were there, they'd be saying, "Hey, what's the story?" Every time the Fed comes out, this order comes in, and it seems to get this information 2 minutes faster than somebody else. Who are these people? You could at least get a complaint, but do you think they're going to chase down an order from Hong Kong just because it's early? I mean, they don't care about the people on the sell side. But these are not victimless crimes.
Right.
This is not
right.
John Flanagan driving 40 and a 30 and didn't hit anybody. I mean, this is every time this happens, there's somebody on the other side that got fleeced. Right? I mean, the whole idea that there's this huge montage that's going on, people actually were writing me all weekend, this can't be true. Why? Because you like Trump? I mean, can you think of two out of all, if you could name me, because we've done business with the Chinese, if you could name me two groups or two hunks of people that I wouldn't trust on a deal ever, it would be Trump and the Chinese, and they're the guys making the deal. I mean, they both renege on everything, right? It's a deal yesterday, tomorrow, I don't like. I mean, how are these guys ever going to sign one? When neither one of them believes the other one, and the next day they both go back at whatever they said the day before. It's been going on a year and a half. Can you see that changing? I don't see how it can.
Well, there really is exquisite irony in all of this because of all the presidents that you would have expected to engage the Chinese on these issues, Trump doesn't seem like the most likely because he's seen as doing business pretty much the same way. But had the Chinese been engaged 20, 25 years ago, it would have been easier then, certainly. And it could have been probably more effective if you could target particular goods, particular industries, before things got so completely out of hand. We would have a very different result now. So that you have Trump, who's probably the least, likely person that you would want maybe doing this, given what his own business record is. But he's the only one who's gone on record trying to do it. So this, to me, just humiliates all the other clowns in the White House before this who could have done it and had every reason to do it and had all the information that Trump had about what this was doing to domestic industries, and they didn't do it. So now we have this uphill fight where Trump doesn't get any real points for doing it, I don't think. I mean, he really doesn't get any credit for having, reversed anything yet, that's for sure.
Well, I
would
agree
with
you.
And it's going to be terribly hard for anybody.
I think and that's one of the reasons why if I didn't have a third person to vote for, I would have voted for him over Hillary. Because, I mean, I've been waiting my whole life for a third party guy, essentially, which is what he is, to pile in and change what I think has been the swamp on both sides. But I will say, John, it's in defense of the other people who need no defense, going all the way back to I'm going to say after Nixon, when we started going over to China, John, it's so uneven. I mean, put yourself in the Oval Office, and I give this example a bunch of times, and Bill Gates runs in while he was still managing Microsoft. Not that they aren't a monopolist, so it's not like their hands aren't, dirty either, because they're like the sneakiest monopolists around. Nobody even pays attention to them being a monopolist, and they are. But they, they pile in and they go, hey, President Flanagan, what the hell? These guys have they own, you know, 500 million computers and they've bought, you know, three things of software. I mean, obviously they're copying my friggin' software. And you sit there and go, oh, man, I better do something. He walks out, and the head of Kentucky Fried Chicken runs in. Hey, what are you doing? You can't screw with these guys. There's more pictures of the colonel than there is Mao over there, and all they do is eat chicken or Coke. So, I mean, some firms love it. Other firms don't. I mean, but name me, because you've been a law guy, more in real estate than in patents. Name me a patent here that everybody doesn't try and steal. I mean, stealing other people's crap is a worldwide sport. It's not just Chinese.
Sure.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, are they worse at it than most people? But how do you tell, I mean, if they come over, I mean, I don't know why we don't, and we have one of the representatives from somewhere, not because she agreed with me, I thought she was pretty bright. Why don't we just have the same rules? Why are we, you don't want them to not be able to buy John Flanagan widgets because they just might come over and give you $20 million or nobody else will. So it's not, why don't we just say you can't buy an American company with over 49%, just like we can over there?
That could always be an option when it comes to investing in, you know, assets, real estate, whatever. You could, there could be such mechanisms to prevent ownership. It would, there's always then, you know, the guise in which you can put these things with, you know, making it difficult to trace actual ownership or trust or whatever else. But there has never really been the desire to do anything like that.
Well, what I'm saying, the reason why is because they've paid up for stuff.
Right.
And the asset holders here want them as buyers.
Right.
And we also have, I think I looked the other day, we have 360,000 students here, all paying out-of-state tuition levels.
Universities love that.
They love it. So are we going to say send them all back? What does the University of Illinois... God, they'll poop in the trustees room if you say that. I know people here in Illinois that got straight A's undergrad, applied for the same graduate in Illinois, and were flushed because they want people paying out of state tuition, either from Wisconsin or China. I mean, what are we? Remember the scene in the Untouchables where Sean Connery asked Kevin Costner, "What are you willing to do?" I mean, what are we willing to do here? You're not going to get these guys to sign an agreement that say, if I buy John Flanagan Inc., I can't open up the hood of the truck and see how it runs. He just bought the damn place.
Right.
And what are you asking him to do? I mean, I don't get it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if we don't want him doing that, send the kids back home. Why are we more concerned about paying by teaching Chinese kids physics than our own kids and wondering why their rackets are getting better than ours? Well, duh.
Right. I mean, that's given the vacuum effect of higher education sucking this money in to keep the whole ship afloat, they don't care what they're doing in the bigger picture when it comes to the people they give preference to for admission or who corporations give preference to for jobs later on or whatever else. It's all supposed to be, a global good somehow. And I have just never bought into that, and I see now it's become so entrenched that trying to put quotas into effect would be, imagine the yelling and screaming if you set a cap on so many foreign students in a state university. That would just be attacked in the courts within seconds. And yet, other countries do that. Or bar foreigners completely or give preference to their own. And this, we don't not trade with them or slap sanctions on them for that. That seems permissible in the other direction. We've taken this approach, that to me is self-destructive, by ignoring what has worked in other places. And I don't know. Now it's become so, such a third rail to start talking about this, but why not talk about it?
Well, Jan, those same people, and I don't know much about this, but Lou and Carl do. I'm guessing you do. Now, those people, say a graduate student and whatever, it's from China or anywhere for that matter, they get to stay or they get to come back on one of these, essentially a work visa, correct? Now, the work visa, from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to be saying stuff that's wrong. What I understand, if you have a high-tech firm, say Google or someplace, you get to bring this guy over, and the guy has to work for you, correct? For
right, your sponsor.
Say 60 grand for, I'll use the term 2 years. Is it 2 years, 5 years? I have no idea. Whatever it is. Now, that dude is now, you've got him for 60. The going rate for him might be 80 or 90 for one of our guys.
Right.
Now, so you essentially have low-price labor, and if he says, I'm leaving this Flanagan guy, he's a cheap screw, I'm going to work for the chief, he's going to pay me the market rate, he can't do that. He can't leave, correct? He's got to stay with... Now, we're not talking about beatings, but does this sound like slavery by another name?
Indentured servitude?
Or, yes.
Well, and yet it's... when it's tied up with, you know, your right to be in a foreign country when you don't have citizenship, I think this is, you know, within a country's power and maybe very desirable.
Well,
to
why
do.
Why would it not be market price? Why would you screw your own citizenry that were a guy with the same degree is now tending bar somewhere because he can't get that job because it's 85 grand is a going rate?
Yeah, well, it shouldn't be. You know, and yet it seems to be the desire here.
Well, we've taken
some cachet in having, you know, saying your student body is X percentage of people who aren't from here, and in a diversity friendly climate like we have, that in and of itself is seen as, well, why isn't that number higher? It becomes a race to making it, you know, an American who's born here somewhat invisible and inessential in the whole equation, and I never understood how that could be. What kind of philosophy are you really pushing here? This is punishing people because of their birth, you know, place of birth.
And, well, I went through the...
What kind of fairness are we really talking about?
I went through the CPI stuff for what teachers used to make in 70-71 here in Chicago. The average, again, I'm having trouble here because some of these indices are mean and some are median. And they're different, and I don't know how they interact, but other than I will tell you which is one and which is the other, so I'm not trying to blow one by you. The teacher's number is average, I believe. So in 1970-71, the average teacher, average meaning mean, 97.29. And in 2019, it's 60,788. This does not include benefits. If you drop the benefits on top of it, it's pushing 100. And the benefits, I'm sure, were a lot less than 70-71. But so if you put that into the CPI average, almost exactly kept pace with CPI. All right, the median individual salary in 1970 was 6,700, and now it's like 38,000. If you throw that in the CPI, those people have fallen behind.
Right.
So. The idea is, now, if you listen to Carl, who says it way more cogently than I do, if you take the fact that the low wages are outsourced, okay, and you make no adjustment on pricing, tariff-wise or other, you've outsourced all the pollution, essentially, too. And now you've essentially outsourced by insourcing the higher-end people that are 50 or 30% lower than the going wage. You've essentially, the 50 companies that really run the country have essentially depleted, have been able to cut the wages of everybody else except for some of the employee unions. The only problem is those people are being asked to pay. So it's not like the teachers have done that spectacularly well on an absolute scale. They haven't, although the benefits keep going up and dramatically, and other people now are losing their benefits. So if you put the benefits in this scale, we're not even close. And if this dude who's making the 6,700 who's now making the 34,000 or whatever, actually 38, if you add, you know, he has to pay 20 grand a year for medical, he's down to 18, right? Where the teacher gets that on top. So the numbers are way worse than they seem. But why are we so anxious to have people getting low wages overseas? And now this thing on the high end, I think, is even worse, because all we do is raise the price of tuition. You have people with student loans, and then we say, oh, by the way, you can't get the job because I got somebody coming over from China that I can only pay 60 because I got him here, and that's my deal. And by the way, he can't go down the block and go somewhere else for 75.
Correct.
I just, the whole thing is so screwed up, John, I can't, it's almost like it's a nightmare, and you're hoping you wake up from it.
Right. Well, and even, you know, to compare the, you know, salaries, say, of a teacher in 1970 to now, And then you, on top of that, you factor in how their pension contributions are handled. And
right.
This was on a thing I saw that the Fraternal Order of Police put up on their website over the weekend but it had side by side what a teacher has in terms of, you know, a snapshot of where it, you know, is in its negotiations and how many days the teachers have been without a contract versus how many days the police have been without a contract, and what a teacher contributes to his or her pension, you know, 2% instead of, you know, used to be 9.5% compared to what a cop is going to contribute. So what's that, you know, doing but draining the resources of the Board of Education and the taxpayer to inflate what, you know, you look at what they're actually, you know, their salary is, but then you add in the fact that they are getting pretty much a free ride on a lot of their pension contribution, which I think would shock most people, would shock a lot of teachers if they knew that were happening. So this, you know, crisis really is just, it's worse than the numbers look on paper. And I don't know how you adjust that, because it's going to mean, you know, 6 month strikes and a lot of unhappy people. But I don't know how else you can rectify.
You gotta
completely out of whack.
You gotta bring it back to where it needs to be. And you know, this is not my personality. And say, okay, you don't like this contract. Here's the new contract, and knock yourself out. But after 30 days, I'm declaring an impasse, and I'm hiring people.
Right.
Because it's that far out of line, and you know. Not the social part, do you need a nurse in schools and stuff, you probably do, but just the money part, the people can't pay it. It's just off the chart. Now I'm going to get a bunch of people right in, but I don't think, how can you define John, let's talk about next time you're on, because we'll go through the pension part. SP Futures up 10 now, and NASDAQ Futures up 30. Come back with Mr. David Andelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tim Allen. She's AV on the board. SP Futures now up 9.25. NASDAQ Futures up 29. Boeing now down $9. So it's having some trouble today, and going on with Friday. We'll talk more about that when we get David on. Trying to get the one of the news that just came across the tape here is these drug companies continue to try and make these changes or these settlements in these opioid cases. And I don't know. We're going to have somebody on who tells me how this all works and how it works properly, because I don't see how those guys settling with a state helps the individual people all that well, but I guess that's just me. We have the Dow up 36. Again, it'll be up a lot more because Boeing has got to be 75 points out of the Dow here. So, like I said, the rest of the indexes are up pretty strong. Over here, we got the DAX up 110.9%. These are up more than they were a while ago. FTSE up 12.2%. It was flat earlier. CAC around up 18.3%. That was flat earlier. So they're moving to the upside a little bit. Nikkei up 56.2%. Shanghai up 1, call that flat. Hang Seng up 6, call that flat. So not much happening over there. Again, these bonds continue to amaze. Sense that the Bund is now only minus 0.34, and the Japanese only minus 0.13. I'm wondering if these guys aren't planning on going positive here while we're fighting about going negative. They're going the other way. Oil down 28 cents, 53.50. Brent down 42 cents, 59. We got gold is up 60 cents. Not much going on here. 1494. Silver, however, up 22 cents, 1780. AV, what do you guys, traffic, weather, sports? And I'm going to fill in the football stuff when you're done.
Good morning. It's 58 degrees right now in Chicago. We're expecting a rainy day starting from the morning about 9 a.m. till 3. A few rumbles of thunder possible later. Winds could occasionally gust over 40 miles per hour. The highest of the day will be 63 and the lowest 47. In Phoenix, 57 degrees right now. The highest of the day, 87 and the lowest 59. Sunny, clear day in Phoenix. In traffic, we have one accident reported on Michigan Avenue at South Water involving semi and a cab. That's it. No more accidents, but we have a lot of road constructions over the city, like a 90 East Norwich. It's kind of big traffic volume. The roadway reduced to one lane, to 90 going west as well. 55 North looks really tied up. That's what I got for traffic.
The football, the Bears, wow, I don't think they're... Let's just go through the standings here real quick, because, boy, some of these divisions are the haves and have-nots. And David's going to tell us how much he made on the Illinois game when we get him on here in a second. Patriots. David, how are you? I'm just going to go through...
I'm doing fine.
We go through these standings real quick. Was there a money line on the Illinois-Wisconsin game? There couldn't have been.
31.5.
That was a point spread.
Yeah, and I actually know someone who went to Illinois, graduated from Illinois, is partial to Illinois, and gave the points. His head was down last night, and it was not me.
Was there a money line?
I don't know that. I don't know. I know he gave the 31.5 for size.
What would the money line have to be? It'd have to be 15-1 or something.
I don't have any idea.
Well, the AFC East, we got the Patriots. Somebody told me that that Kansas City is favored for the Super Bowl in Vegas. I don't see how, as good as I think they are, I don't see how you put them ahead of the Patriots. There's six. Talk about it, here's a division of who the haves and have-nots, David. Patriots 6-0, the Bills 5-1, Jets 1-4, Dolphins 0-6. So the Dolphins are going for the something sombrero.
And how about NFC West?
I'll get there.
Drew wins in a row.
I'll get there. Chiefs 5-2, Raiders 3-3, then the Broncos 2-5, and the Chargers 2-5. Chargers were good last year. AFC North, Ravens 5-2, here's the division. Browns 2-4, Steelers 2-4, Bengals 0-7. How bad are those guys? Now we got the Colts. This division's actually halfway decent. Colts 4-2, the Texans 4-3, Jaguars 3-4, and the Titans 3-4. So that one's still wide open. But still, there's some really bad teams over there. Over the national side, in the NFC East, Cowboys 4-3, because they won yesterday. Eagles 3-4. I think they beat the Eagles, right? Yeah. Giants are 2-5. They're sucko. Redskins 1-6, even though they just got a new coach. In the West, I did not think the 49ers were that good, but they're 6-0. Seahawks 5-2, so there's a race. Rams are 4-3, so they're still in it. And the Cardinals are in it, 3-3. NFC North, Packers 6-1. Vikings 5-2. Bears 3-3, half a game ahead of the lowly Lions, which are 2-3. The Lions don't actually have a bad team, so the Central Division there, or the North, is pretty decent. Now the South, Saints at 6-1, that's without their quarterback. Panthers 4-2, Buccaneers 2-4. The Falcons, talk about bad times in a new stadium, 1-6. So there's some surprises there, David, I think.
Yep.
What do you make of the great front running debate and that we've been suspicious of ever since President Tweet took over? Well, it's not like he started it. I mean, there's been front running as long as you and I have been around.
Yeah, I mean it is interesting. I mean, and it's going to be hard to figure just because of, you know, the algorithms, black holes, the this, the that, you know, and you know, segueing to the futures. But I presume you're talking about bond movements in the futures. Is that what you're talking?
No, I'm talking about the William Cohen article in Vanity Fair that now he's being castigated. Where when the Chinese Hong Kong lady came out and said they'd changed the rule and the markets bounced back the next morning, how, you know, thousands of E-minis were bought right before that announcement coming out of Hong Kong.
Because there was something last week,
yeah.
I think it was Friday, where when Trump tweets in advance, like 10 seconds or 15 seconds, that there's huge volumes in the bond and T-note futures. So that came out Friday.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought that's what you were referring
well,
to.
Well, this is a little earlier in the week. There was probably four examples he used. I'm going to say two or three of them overseas and a couple of them were here.
Uh-huh.
So basically, they're being front-run out of the White House, they're being front-run out of the Fed, and they're being front-run out of Asia. I mean, so then Carl was on this morning and he says, do even the CME's position seems to be, since it's in an index, it's not technically front-running and everything's okay. I mean,
bonds and notes are not indexes.
Right, that's a new wrinkle. I didn't catch that one. I was so busy reading all the listeners telling me that I'm so against the administration. This Cohen guy's, you know, an ass basically, and this is all wrong. And nobody's, come on, David. Whenever there's stuff to be front run, people are trying to front run it. Right, that's the industry.
No question.
Why do people think that isn't the truth? I mean,
how much have we talked about it? You know, where, you know, fills in the dark holes or black holes or whatever you want to call it, you know, with thousands of a cent ahead of block orders.
Well, that's right. And but I mean, I don't feel that the. Do you think anybody coming from China feels they got any morals in front running an order here?
I doubt it.
I can't even imagine them thinking
and if they do, they're probably not involved in the markets.
Right. So the guy from the Board of Trade, or the CME, said that the market, the stuff came from various different sources. Well, William Cohen never said that one person bought 10,000 E-minis. Once somebody got into the bandwagon, it gets on real quick, right?
Right. No, I get it.
Well, what do you make of this? Are we going to make new highs here? I think we are.
I don't know. I mean, it's the season, and we've talked about this even when the market was down the early part of the month. But, you know, from October 18th, 20th, roughly, to January 10th is the most positive seasonal of the year, so we're in it. And the market acts well. Every time there's even a 2% break, it comes back to challenge highs. And yet it's not blasting through the highs either. So maybe it's just nothing more than a trading range with a slightly upward bias. I still think, though I'm friendly overall, and in my weekly focus stocks, there was definite improvement quality-wise for growth issues. I kind of still think, if nothing else for hedges, I'm not saying speculative shorts, but I think for hedges, S&P front month future 3009 and above, I think is time to take some protection. And, you know, you look VIX at 14 and it actually ticked below last week. I think that, you know, taking some put protection or some short calls on covered basis is wise for a portion of the portfolio. I'm not suggesting go short into a market that keeps coming back from breaks and isn't a positive seasonal, but I think some hedge protection makes some sense.
Did you catch the article over the weekend where the guy was talking about debt loads and how if we end up having a big recession again, that since the debt load's way bigger than it was in 2008, we've essentially got out of a debt problem by more debt, which I don't know if that's the solution, but...
It isn't, but as long as rates stay this low, it's probably what's going to happen, at least for the short term.
I would agree. But he was talking about it in Trump's campaign. I don't really remember this. So, saying that you don't worry about government debt because if you have to, you just basically return, you know, 80 cents on the buck like a real estate deal. And I don't remember that out of the campaign.
Well, Trump's used to that.
Oh, yeah. Well, he is used to it. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. That
sometimes he, zero. Yeah.
But the level, I hope he has risen mentally to his new level because it's not necessarily a real estate deal. But I don't
Atlantic City casinos anymore.
No, but how do the people? Matter of fact, I went to a Halloween party at Dr. J's last night. I had a great time, and so I was giving him a bunch of. I said that group you sit with at noon. I don't usually do this day, but the other day I had to. I sent him a text about. They had two or three guys on the panel ranting about how the Fed is just not, you know, coming up with, they're not hauling their own weight. They're not doing like the rest of the world. We're not going negative. So I tweet Jan, I go, who are these people you're sitting with? We're talking about an 8.5% money supply growth when the place is growing by 2%, if you're enthusiastic about that number, which you and I aren't. And we're talking about QE now. Was it 50 or 60 billion a month, which essentially is going to pay for three quarters of the next year's trillion-dollar deficit? And these morons think that they're doing nothing. What do they want them to do? You know, Jan goes, I got that. I was almost laughing on the air. He almost made me laugh in front of the guys. This one guy, man, we need some more help from the Fed. The other thing I put in there saying that then another guy says, no, the Fed's done the heavy lifting. We need more governmental fiscal help. And at the bottom, I go, since when is a trillion not enough? I mean, there's no fiscal at all help, a trillion-dollar year deficit.
No, I get it. And, you know, in my mind, and I'm not, you know, on your side of the tracks as far as fundamentals, but, you know, just everything that you've planted in my brain and you know, what I see myself, between the jump in debt, which I have talked about, corporate debt, as much or more than federal debt, and the Fed's help of keeping rates so low, and stock buybacks. I mean, if you removed all of that, you got to wonder where this S&P would be.
Oh, I would too. I concern myself with the consumer, David, I'm asking your help. I don't even know what the definitions of some of these economic terms are anymore. People talk about the consumer is carrying the people that I talk about every day, whose salaries are not keeping up with inflation or anything else, or some people's salaries. Clearly, the public employee unions are doing better than regular people, and the top 1% is doing a lot better. But how I don't understand. I don't get the idea about if you, well, your sons are older now. One just got married. Congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you.
But if you had a son that was, say, 21, 22, he just got out of school, maybe got Indiana grad school like you did, and he gets a job. Okay, no, he's got nothing, right? He's other than debt. Then all of a sudden you come home and
my son and daughter had good dad.
Okay,
they left college with no debt.
So you pull up to the driveway and I got my 20-year-old Suburban, but it's a classic one. It's a Secret Service one, whatever. So there's a reason why I keep it. I pull up and I can't get in the driveway because there's some brand new car in there that just cost somebody like $35,000. And I'm thinking, I know Junior got this job, but that can't be. That can't be. At his first day before he even shows up, I walk in. He goes, "Hey, Pops, how do you like my new wheels? you just paid more for one car than I paid for all the cars in my entire life. By the way, where'd you get the doll? What do you mean? They got this seven year financing, and I paid $35,000, and they financed $34,200.
it's outrageous. But I had an experience literally last night where my partner's older son, the one who gave the 31.5 points to Illinois and lost outright. And I mean, he had three cars in the garage that he bought in the last 2 days. And I'm serious; those three cars were more money than my house in Highland Park.
Well, I don't, but just in terms of definition, I'm not criticizing. I'm not doing anything. Just in terms of definition. Did he really buy it?
Two he leased, one he bought outright.
What I'm saying, in my example, is there some part of the loan where it's not even yours? I mean, I guess the guy sold it. There'd been a GM or whoever you bought it from.
He did trade in a Ferrari.
Okay, well, these definitions, I talk about consumers. Can consumer sentiment trump consumer, not the Trump in the White House, can it trump the money in your wallet? I mean, when it was a cash world, and you know, my grandmother used to say he's got a $100 taste with a $5 wallet or something along those lines. But in those days, you couldn't wing a card at somebody and buy a big dinner, drinks around, and throw a credit card. But you actually had to have the cash, right? I mean, I'm not saying we should go back to that, but some of these definitions, if somebody is enthusiastic about the next year. Consumer is, quote, confident. But if you ask them the questions, well, David, you're very confident. Do you expect a raise? Well, no. Okay, do you expect your property tax to go up? Well, yeah, they always do. What else you got going? Well, my daughter is entering first grade, and she's going to this Catholic school or private school, and it's going to cost me $5,000. But you're not getting a raise. No. What exactly are you confident about? I mean,
you know, and the whole situation is so bifurcated. I mean, we were it was so beautiful over the weekend that we literally bought zero, got a watch cleaned for free, but we walked around, you know, Target store, couldn't get a space. Target, you know, and I'm not touting it, own no shares, but, you know, you walk in, and yes, it's discounted, but they have their own lines from designers and whatever. You know, I don't know, a fraction or half of, you know, what those same designer labels, you know, cost at Neiman Marcus or whatever, but just packed and you couldn't get a spot. Walked into Macy's at Old Orchard. If I hit a putt, it would go to the end of the store without any kind of interference. Empty, 80% off. Junk stuff,
yeah,
and just crap. I remember 20 years ago, Macy's, you know, in Manhattan was like a serious upscale store. Now it's just absolute junk, and I don't own any Macy's either. But you see why one stock went from $70 to $115, and one went from $60 to $15.
Well, I always thought I used to do my Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve, David. I'd beat feet out of the pit. And I'd say, I'll meet you guys at Series. Well, it wasn't Series then. It was the Sign of the Trader. Meet you guys at Sign of the Trader at 5 o'clock. And that was pretty quick back then. I'd hustle over to Marshall Fields. I'd go downstairs to the men's store. And I had, you know, my stepfather, my brother, a couple of people I'm buying for. and my mom, and I would get her stuff in the men's store, but there was the Ralph Lauren shop was downstairs, and they wrapped it for me.
Oh, it's amazing.
But the weird part was, David, I paid those days, I paid $30 for a shirt. But you know what? 5 years and 100 washes later, the shirt's still fine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if I'd have paid $10 for a shirt, it's dead in 2 months. So you never really felt like you were getting fleeced because the stuff you bought had some quality to it. So I used to buy, nobody needs to know, but I used to play handball or basketball virtually every night. Whenever I went down to Notre Dame, I would always go to the bookstore, not because I needed someone in the end, and I'm not that kind of guy, but they sold serious quality. All they sold in the bookstore in those days was Champion, back when it was a real name.
Right.
And you bought a T-shirt there. It was good for literally 50 washes in the Notre Dame laundry at 5,000 degrees. It still held up. You know, I mean, where you couldn't go anywhere else and buy that quality because it essentially was the quality of a football team. I'm sure if you went to Wisconsin and they had Champion stuff in there, it would be there. You know, but the point being is you paid up for it. It was $20 for a T-shirt in 1980.
Right.
But the thing was yours for life.
Right? And that's why when you say, you know, what kind of consumer confidence is there, literally in 30 minutes in two different, you know, stores, in Macy's everyone's heads down and nobody cares and nobody's buying even at, you know, 80% off. And in Target, they're paying what's on the rack even though it's much better quality and designer names, you know, but their own line, so it is reduced. But everyone's smiling and the cash registers are packed, so one store has tremendous consumer confidence and the other is like going to a graveyard.
Well, when you go to the Walmart, though, everything there, I won't say is, if you compare stuff, their stuff is just okay. I mean, I bought some headlights. I'm upgrading my lighting system in my truck.
Right.
So I bought the real high-end headlights. Well, now I found out that there's actually higher-end headlights. So I'm mad at myself for didn't buy those. But they were the exact, as a matter of fact, they're $2 higher than Meijer's. So and if you go online, everybody's the same price. They're all like $24. A bulb, which is, you know, reasonable number.
Right. So,
but if you go, they must have an incredible line into somebody overseas. I mean, you can get a Christmas tree. I mean, it looks pretty sparse with lights and everything on it for $25. I mean,
wow.
So it looks like crap basically. But it is a Christmas tree. I mean, for my apartment, I could shove it in a corner and say I have a Christmas tree. I mean, where do they get this stuff? They make this basically this crap somewhere. It must be somewhere overseas. They somehow can box it. Ship it all the way over here. Well, what does it cost to make? $1? It couldn't. Or
it's
$2?
Unbelievable.
I mean,
and who knows? I mean, obviously they must get it where the labor's ridiculously cheap, and they buy with the scale that even the transportation is less.
Yeah, I would. All right, David, we got to look at the market here. We got two things. Any hope for Boeing? It's down like $30 now in 2 days.
Yeah, 320. It's probably a low risk buy. I wouldn't risk more than $5. I wouldn't buy it because I don't where you have overhang like that, whether it's them or J&J, which the two of them were responsible for the vast majority of the declines Friday in the Dow. With news pending or accounting issues or in this case, you know, model issues or opioid settlement issues, I don't want to buy that. But yeah, if someone's just doing the technicals, 320. Risk $5. If you're right, you're right to 360. If you're wrong, you're wrong for $5.
Well, I think if you do that, and I'm not going to
mention
anybody doing
that,
action stuff, but I'm saying
it
for me to
be bought.
For me to, I'd have to have one hell of a big portfolio to plunk 1,000 shares of Boeing or 5,000 Johnson & Johnson there, because
I agree.
How do you when you're in these court cases, David? I'll be honest with you. I didn't make people a lot of money over the years. Not so much lately, because it doesn't really matter, but years ago, because I absolutely refused to get into tobacco stocks.
Right.
And yet they, if you count the dividends, from 82 when I started, or 81, through, you know, 2010, they probably overperformed everything in terms of dividends and everything. And yet I never could figure out how am I going to look a client in the eye and say, I bought, you know, R.J. Reynolds or something. And all of a sudden, out of the 1,000 lawsuits they had going every day, they actually lost a couple and they were broke. many. I mean, somebody's
that first Florida settlement, it was huge.
Yeah. But, I mean, how many years did they get away with it, though, before
right.
they...
Right, and Janssen, then they largely got away after the settlement since.
But now, Janssen & Janssen, we're talking people are winging around, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of settlement. I mean, how do you... They're big, but is anybody that... Boeing, I mean, how many planes they got on the ground? I mean, what if it's another year?
Yeah, who knows? It could be.
I mean, do you have a guess on that? I don't. I mean,
I don't. I have no idea.
I don't think it'll be January. I'm guessing March.
I mean, they're still touting the end of this year. Sometime they're talking February. Nader was just on and said it's going to take a year. So who knows?
What? Any thought on anything coming back on these oil companies? You only got 30 seconds. Schlumberger ever a buy? It hit 40 when the Arab thing got attacked. Was that the greatest short ever when that piece of crap?
Some of the services, you know, firms like a Schlumberger or a Halliburton might be a little bit of a buy. Marathon Petroleum's getting big time options action, but I'm not involved. I'm not recommending them.
Why do people like Marathon better than Schlumberger and
Halliburton? Supposedly there's some kind of merger acquisition deals. Some activists.
God, if you had a dime for everybody who bought a place because he thought it was getting taken over, how rich would you be?
Not too rich.
They actually got taken over, yeah, but for every dime they spent, we'd be very rich.
Yeah.
David, thank you very much. Talk to you on Thursday. S&P futures up 11.75 now, and NASDAQ is up 37.50. We're moving up higher a little bit in Europe, too. I think we have a bullish day. Well, we'll let you know tomorrow morning. Stocks and Jack.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.